Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, August 6th, 2015, and with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
Splendid.
Excellent. Excellent. And John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Good. I feel all gooey this morning, G-U-I.
Oh, you're so clever. Hey, you know, I think that, we can't recover from that. Hey, I have topics for us today. The first one is the news that Apple Music, Apple's music subscription service that has Beats One Radio and excuse me, the streaming music radio stations and Connect, which is the kind of like social network thing for artists. Well, 1 month in and Apple has 11 million subscribers, which is a lot. That's about a little over half of the total number of subscribers that Spotify has right now, assuming you're talking about paid subscribers. But
it's been a month and 2 weeks.
Yeah. So
what,
yeah.
What
so
that's worth.
Yeah. So a little over a month and a half now. So actually, so that puts us about halfway through the trial period, and that's the thing here. So far, no one is having to pay for Apple Music because when they started it on June 30th, is that right?
23rd. No, 30th. Yeah. So a month and a week. I was wrong. For some reason, I was going back to the 23rd. It launched on June 30th.
Okay, that's what I thought. Right. Okay, so June 30th. So from that point forward up until the end of September, no one has to pay for Apple Music. Right.
Because everyone gets 3 months free, by definition, everyone on Apple Music is currently in that three-month trial period.
Right. So Apple has 11 million currently unpaid subscribers for Apple Music.
About 2% of their credit card holders.
So there's a lot of potential growth there. Apple thinks that they can get that up to 100 million subscribers. But the trick is trying to get that subscriber base to grow when people are paying for the service. And that starts come October. So from October 1st forward, the number of free trial period subscribers is going to drop off. I mean, it doesn't have to, but the assumption is right now that not everyone is going to continue on with the service.
No, they'll probably keep 80%.
You think that it'll be that high?
Well, I do, in part because of inertia and momentum. So people signed up, but you're going to have to actively turn it off.
That's true. Yeah, right? There will be people that just don't.
There will be people that don't, that just don't. And there are lots of people who like Apple Music, and there are lots of people who like Beats Radio.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, I would imagine that Apple is going to be able to keep 80% because it's Apple, because some people won't bother to turn it off even if they're not using it, and because a lot of people actually do like it.
Yeah, actually, this is the first streaming music service where I have been seriously considering continuing a paid subscription.
Yeah, I'll probably decide after my road trip.
I think that sounds like a really good thing because you're going to have a lot of car time.
I'm going to have a lot of car time, and I've got a T-Mobile device, and T-Mobile doesn't count my Apple Music streaming against my data caps.
Right. So for you, this could be better than satellite radio.
It could be, yeah.
Yeah,
so that, yeah, I'm going to give Beats Radio in particular a nice solid listen.
I'm just curious, to see what's up. Yeah, I'm curious what your reaction is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, knowing just how deep you are into the music world, I'm thinking that Beats Radio could be something that you really, really love, or you think is just horrible.
Yep. Well, I've liked it with the sampling I've done, but there's a difference between sampling something and listening to it, in part just to listen to it for our jobs here. Mm-hmm. And there's a difference between that and it actually being my entertainment.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It totally changes how you listen to the music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this will be a great experiment. I'm so glad that you're going to be our road trip guinea pig.
Yep. You're welcome. My pleasure.
That's awesome. Yeah. So right now we're in that free phase. I don't have anything concrete to pin this on, Brian, but I think your 80% figure for retention after the initial 3-month window may be high.
It certainly could. Yeah, that actually was intended as a high number, that Apple could keep 80%.
Ah, okay. I missed the could part. All right.
But I would say 60% at the bottom.
And see, I'm thinking 50%.
I was kind of thinking along the same lines, Jeff. I think there's some momentum that Brian talked about, but I think there's also some feeling like people will say, well, I'm going to be automatically charged every month, that I don't need another recurring charge on my credit card, and I'm not getting that much out of it, and there's other things I can do.
I think you're projecting a little bit, John, because that's what people do with the streaming services. I mean, Spotify's got 20 million. Yes. All right, you know, so
and if you take into account Spotify's non-paying user base, they have 75 million.
Hmm.
So that's a lot of people that are into the streaming music thing.
Of course, Apple doesn't have the free option.
That's correct.
You know what I worry about, guys? I worry about Apple trying to reach this goal of 100 million. And if it doesn't happen as fast as Apple would like because of people making conscious choices, I worry that one of these days we're going to see an update to iTunes 13 and it's going to say bug fixes and new features, and then we're going to find out we're automatically subscribed and there's no way out.
Apple can't do that.
Yeah, they can. And they will. They'll just say it's so popular.
But John, you can't. It's illegal to just automatically make people pay for stuff. I mean,
right. Yeah.
They legally can't do that.
There'll be some twist to it. There'll be something we won't like.
Well, to be fair, if it's iTunes, there will always be something we don't like.
That's right. That's right.
Now, what I can see happening is that Apple changes the way they present iTunes updaters and iTunes installers so that you have to opt out of a trial for Apple Music as opposomto opt in.
I don't think they can do that. They're not going to do that, man. I think they got burned by the YouTube thing. They're not going to be automatically signing up people for stuff. I'm referring to the free album.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the free album, which, by the way, didn't bother me at all.
Well, no, it didn't.
It didn't bother me either.
It didn't bother any of us. Let's not go off onto that particular rabbit hole, but Apple did get burned by that, and there would be such a backlash if everybody was automatically...
I'm not saying they'd force us to pay. I'm just saying there'll be some feature of iTunes 13 that will go, oh, I don't like this. I'm annoyed. As part of Apple. Apple is endlessly creative and inventive in thinking about ways to do this kind of stuff without violating your rights.
Well, right now Apple is working on figuring out how to get people that are interested in Apple Music but aren't signing up. Man, I talked myself into a sentence that I just can't end properly. Apple wants to figure out how to convert people that are interested in Apple Music into subscribers.
Of course.
Yeah, well, it depends on your estimate of the market. Does Apple firmly believe that it has some technical basis for 100 million people, or are they just kind of like hoping against hope?
Of course they have a basis for that. That was a very carefully thought out statement that are you on cold medicine?
I mean, 100 million seems like kind of round and kind of big and kind of pie in the sky, you know, and you wonder, well, that'd be nice to get 100 million, but, you know, what?
I would imagine, the real market potential? That it's because they actually think they can get 150 million. If Apple's saying that they're shooting for 100, it's because they think they can beat it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what lengths they go to go beyond mere, you know, casual customer signups and acceptance.
I'm sure they'll find some very clever ways to help draw people in.
Yeah,
One thing that I think will actually help a lot comes this fall when they release their Android client, because the number of Android users that are out there
is
really, really high. And that's a potential listener base that right now is completely untapped.
There you go.
Yeah. So the 11 million people that have signed up today for the trial consists of iPhone and iPad owners, and Mac owners, and Windows PC owners. And my guess is the majority of those people are coming from the OS X and iOS camp.
Yeah.
And not the Windows camp.
Yeah, and I would to me the presence of Apple Music on the desktop is I'm not going to call it an afterthought, but everyone pretty much considers mobile to be the music delivery method of the future, of the near-term future at the very least. So, I mean, I would imagine that most Apple Music listeners at this point are iOS users.
I think that's a really safe bet.
Yeah, so, you know, expanding it to Android is definitely going to I don't know, you two are both just all like Debbie Downers on this, and I think Apple's going to do just fine with Apple Music.
You know, I may sound like a Debbie Downer on this, but I think Apple is going to do fine. I think that one of the biggest problems they'll have is that there are all these tech pundits out there that love bagging on Apple.
And it's the echo chamber, man. Who cares about the echo chamber? Well, we care about the echo chamber. We're part of the echo chamber. And a lot our listeners are part of the echo chamber, and our readers are part of the echo chamber. But the broader world doesn't pay attention to the echo chamber.
No, they don't. But they pay attention when their local TV station runs a sensationalized story about something related to Apple.
Yeah, and Apple always...
And usually get it wrong.
Apple,
of course they get it wrong.
Continues to kick butt. I mean, AntennaGate was a big thing. I mean, you take all these different points where Apple had all these negative stories about it, and all the while, Apple just continues to do well.
Yeah, of course they do. And I think that they will continue to do well. I think that Apple Music will do well, and I think it will be a success. It's just a matter of who thinks it's a success and who doesn't. And that will be irrelevant base. Man, I'm having a horrible time putting my sentences together today. It's irrelevant whether the echo chamber thinks Apple Music is a success, because like you said, Brian, the greater public, they don't care.
The echo chamber matters to those in the echo chamber. That's the nature of an echo chamber.
Jeff, yeah. Was there a date on hitting 100 million?
Or not
was
that I
left
know.
Open-ended?
I think it's an open-ended thing, which is actually a really smart move.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would think that Apple would be looking at that number within, say, 12 to 24 months.
I think that might be a little optimistic, but I could see 24 to 36 months. I am kind of a Debbie Downer, but I'm a Debbie Downer with an upswing.
But neither one of you have any basis for your Debbie Downerness. You're just like vague, like, you know, I just don't think people are going to want to do that, and you know, Apple may or may not do it. Whatever, man. Apple's going to be the Apple Music's going to do just fine.
Yeah, Apple Music's going to do just fine, and to be fair, your time scale for Apple hitting 100 million has just as much of a
it's true. I pulled that number out of the 12 to 24 months out of thin air. And the foundation of me saying that was probably what Apple was thinking is that, to me, that's the kind of number that they would toss out as a number that they think that they can hit within a year or two, versus whether or not, I mean, it, wasn't a time frame based on whether what I think Apple will or won't do. Just I don't think Apple would be giving us a 5-year goal.
I agree. I don't see Apple doing a 5-year goal on this. So 1 to 2 years, maybe 2 to 3 years. Also maybe. So we could split the difference and say this is a 24-month goal.
Fair enough.
There we go. And now that I've said it, people will run with it, and they'll say Apple confirms that they'll have 100 million users for Apple Music in 24 months. That's how it works, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, as long as we're all here, and we all love supporting Mac Observer, and we all love supporting Apple, why don't we put the two together? Next time you need to go buy an Apple product, go to macobserver.com/Apple Store. And that link, what it does is it lets us all share in the fun. You get the great product that you want to buy, and we get a little bit of a kickback from Apple as a thank you for sending you their way. And that's a really great way to help support our shows, and a really great way to help support all the writing that we do, and to make sure that the website stays up and running and that everyone's happy. So check it out, macobserver.com/Apple Store. And thank you in advance for all the support that you guys give us. Listeners, you rock.
Indeed.
Okay, the other thing that I wanted to take a look at today in the couple minutes that we have left is something that you started diving into, John, and this is the evolution of macOS as it relates to the internet, and I'm really curious what is your take?
Yeah, now we're getting into the gooey part of the show. Brian pointed me, thank you, Brian, to his fascinating article by Adam Baker called "The Post Mac Interface." And what he's done is sort of looked at the evolution of the Mac since 1984 and how the user interface has evolved. In the early days, it was just you and the computer. You would point and click. You would make things happen. You'd look at documents. You'd drag documents into folders. But the internet came along, public internet. I think it was about 1996. And so now we have computers connected to the internet, talking to each other. Video came on strong. And so the kinds of things that we do and the services that we have, like Google search, where agents work for us as opposed to us doing direct manipulation on the computer, have kind of changed the texture of how we work on our computers. And therefore, the GUI has to evolve to support those kinds of things. So Adam takes us through the first step, which was the seminar article by Gettner and Nielsen in 96 about the introduction of the internet to our Macs. And then Adam goes on to extrapolate even further beyond that and then looks at the 20 years of evolution since we've been on the internet and how the Mac GUI has to change and has changed. So it's a fascinating article. I highly recommend it. It's excellent reading. It's a little on the long side, but it's rich and well-researched.
Well, okay. Well, then my big question for you is, has Apple's interfaces really changed that much in relation to the internet? I mean, are these two really that intertwined?
Yeah, you kind of see that a little bit in the kinds of features that Apple's been adding to OS X along over the years. It used to be that there were, you know, very Unix-y and personal features, things like encrypted hard disks and Time Machine in the early days. But now you're seeing things like search and more collaborative things and folded into OS X Yosemite. So while the fundamentals of the GUI haven't changed too much, we get these underlying features folded into it so that we can more richly operate on the internet, but we do it with the kind of a familiar GUI that's been evolving over the years. So it's a mixture.
So in essence, we're getting an interface that is now threaded in with the internet. So on our computers, we're interacting with content that's local to our hard drive or SSD, but then also mixed in with internet content, and they're kind of blending together. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Huh.
Exactly.
Okay, so does this mean that products like Chrome OS, which is kind of a web browser-ish based interface for a computer, is going to be the way of the future, and that we're all going to end up with like a web interface just for everything we do?
I don't know about that. I think that's a low-cost, limited way to sell an inexpensive computer, but time has proven that there are still many things that require a full-blown operating system. Otherwise, Windows wouldn't be so popular still. There's so many things that we do, devices and hardware and accessories and operations locally and on the internet. You really have to have a hybrid, and that's exactly what Windows does and what Mac OS X does, OS X.
All right, so we've gone from a very, very isolated operating system in the beginning to something that is very connected today.
Yes. Yes, and that has subtle influences on the GUI, but it, as we've seen it evolve, it's fascinating to watch the flavor and the look and feel of OS X subtly change and adapt to all the new technologies and things like Twitter and video. That's been fun to watch, but it's very comfortable. Somebody from 1984 looked at a modern Mac, they'd be blown away, but they'd say, I still recognize what's going on.
All right. Hey, we're out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up. Brian, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, yeah.
Always awesome. And John, thank you for being here and bringing your really interesting insights.
My pleasure.
It absolutely rocks to have both of you here. Listeners, thank you for joining us again today. And we'll see everyone tomorrow.